No one is. That's not my problem. But in case it's good, I'm a recorder. And I recorded yours, Wayne. And if it's okay to put it on the central office website, I will.
Yeah, it's fine. Royalties.
Yeah, so we have some newcomers in the room. And I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to welcome you to the land of the living, the home of the free and the brave. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
And I think I want to start out. We started already with the Serenity Prayer, but I thought it would be a good idea to start with the basic alcoholic prayer, and we'll do the plural version. And I want you to memorize it, and then we'll say it. Just, God, please help us. Okay? So if you're new here, the singular version is, God, please help me. But I want you, whoever wants to join me, God, please help us. Okay? And praying is as easy as that. And has anyone here been in prison or jail?
No.
Okay. Did any of you that raised your hands, did you see the sky today? Did you see those clouds? I mean, it was breathtaking. And I want to remember that next time if you want to drink or use. Just remember, you got to see the sky today. I got to see the sky today because I'm sober. I'm clean too. My addiction was like nicotine for 20 years. And I have 27 years of nicotine sobriety. And I smoked my share of pot. I did my share of psychedelics. And I probably did like a gram of cocaine in my life. And I stayed away from all that kind of stuff. And had one or two rolls of crisscross whites. And that's my drug story. And Wayne, that was a really good talk. You know, you mentioned the G word right off the bat. I mean, you've prayed to God all along and through thick and thin. I grew up, I had four sisters on the day I was born, and I had eight sisters by the time I was 6 years old, and then my brother came along when I was eight. And it was a big Catholic family, and we grew up devout Catholics, so I grew up, like, I don't know, when I had my first communion and stuff like that, I had a love of God that was really powerful, and a love of life, and a sense of meaning, and a sense of purpose. And by the day before I got sober, I had disdain for God, if there was a God, and had no spiritual connection. And the next day, when I had a willingness to try being sober for a day, I experienced that as some kind of grace, some kind of blessing, some kind of gift. And I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on my drunkalogue, I don't think, I'm not sure, but a picture's worth a thousand words. Now I'm going to pass around my card. If some of you have seen it, welcome to grab one, keep one, or not. But take a look, because the picture is worth a thousand words. And I have a really good laser printer. So it's pretty simple. And along the way in sobriety, I volunteered to answer the phone at the central office in Santa Barbara. And at that time, there was a guy who was bald, and he was pulling his hair out, and he'd been the treasurer for 3 years. And they needed a new treasurer. And God said, Billy, it's got your name on it. And so I said, I'll do it. And they didn't have anyone else willing to step up. Well, I stepped up for it, and it turned out he had the computer records. This is back in 1992. He had the central office records on a computer in an Excel spreadsheet. And up until that point in time, computers were for people who couldn't figure things out in their head. And I could always figure it out. I didn't figure out very much, but whatever I figured it out in my head. And anyhow, from being willing to answer the phone at central office, God led me to becoming computer literate. And when I was 2 years sober, a friend of mine gave me that photograph. He said, hey, you want this from the old days? And I said, sure. And I stuck it in my copy of As Bill Sees It. And years later, I started to learn how to do graphics. And up until that point in time, I had a card that just said Billy N. And one day at a time, and my phone number, and God said, you know, there's newcomers that'll be jetting out of the room at the end of the meeting, and if you can, you know, give them a picture, it is worth a thousand words to tell them, I know what it's like to be wasted, and I know what it's like to be sober, and so I did it, and with that said, there's an 11th step over there, and it says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, and when I say God, I want you to understand it means a higher power. according to your own understanding, and it is fine if you don't call your higher power God or you don't think of your higher power as God or anything like that. I was 2 years sober before I used the word God, and it's easy to remember, easy to spell. But to me, what it describes is something beyond limit, beyond my comprehension, without which there is no life. You know, to me, life itself is such a full-on miracle that we're even here, sober or not. Anyhow, a picture is worth a thousand words. And I was 8 years sober when I saw the word only. And my sharing today is not just for the newcomers, it's for people that have been sober a while too, because my love of my higher power, my love of life today is beyond measure. And it's not from when I wake up until I go to bed. But once I wake up and I get going, get my prayers going, start connecting the dots, wow, here again. That love becomes a fire and it burns all day, no matter what I'm going through or what I'm confronting or what I'm dealing with. And so I want you to know that it can get like that. But anyhow, so I was 8 years sober when I saw that word only in the 11th step. And that was really important for me, because before that, I would pray like, you know, thank you for keeping me sober today, God, or please keep me sober today, or whatever. But I didn't know, I just didn't, anyhow, when I saw the word only, it just simplified it. And since then, from, like they say, you know, be careful what you pray for, because God answers prayers, and I prayed for knowledge of God's will and the power to carry it out, and I'd had a lot of it along the way in sobriety, but I started to recognize it as that. And anyhow, so in putting my picture on a card, it's not about my ego, it's about common sense, and everyone in this room should have a card with your picture on it to give to a newcomer. And I'd be glad to make it for you. But I just wanted to express that. And I got my big book here. And there's a couple of really important things I want to share. And this is especially for the newcomer. You'll hear people say here, just read the black print, not the other stuff. And you don't add anything to it. It's just what it's all here. It's all right here. And get a sponsor and to lead you through the steps and so on. And I just want you to pause and recognize that back in 1939, Alcoholics Anonymous was nowhere. It was in Cleveland, it was in Akron, it was in New York. And they had something going on where they were staying sober. And they pieced it together and they wrote the big book. It was written about in the Saturday Evening Post in different ways. It got to be known and people heard about it and they wrote for it. And near the I've got this thing from my sister-in-law's memorial. So I'm going to be a little choked up a little bit, but I'll get to that in a second. But anyhow, I want you to understand that in this book, I got countless favorite lines in here. I go to the Wednesday night book study. What I'm going to say next isn't like heresy. It might sound like heresy to some people, but it says on the page 164 on what we call A Vision for You, it says a book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. And you can transmit that you know where there's an AA meeting. If you haven't done the steps or anything, you can transmit that. If you're talking to someone, hey, you want to go to a meeting with me? You know, you can transmit what you got, but you can't transmit what you haven't got. So see to it that your relationship with him is right, and that's kind of a challenge. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others, and this is a great fact. What I want to emphasize there is that they're saying, we realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. So while you do want to read the black in the book, this is not all there is. This is something else. And the next thing I'm going to read to you, it tells you what this is. It says, thus we grow. And this is toward the back of the first part of the big book, where they're talking about what are we doing, why are we doing it, what is alcoholism, are you an alcoholic or not an alcoholic, to be able to identify as an alcoholic, and then to have a way to go forward in life sober without drinking. How can you possibly do it? And it's the steps, and it's sharing with others, and so on. And anyhow, but I mean, I picture this lonely person, man or woman, in Timbuktu, Alaska, or, you know, wherever, Tacoma, Washington, that's where my dad was born, with his book in their hands, and they've just read all this stuff. And in a vision for you, they're saying to this one single individual with the book in their hands, they're saying, here's a vision for you, okay? So they're saying, thus we grow, and so can you. Though you be but one man with this book in your hand, we believe and hope it contains all you will need. Okay, but that's not what all it says. It says we believe and hope it contains all you will need to begin. Okay, so with this book in hand, you have all you need to begin. Having a sponsor can help immeasurably. The first person in Tacoma that had this book in their hand, this is all they had to go on. When they shared it with someone else doing a 12-step and they stayed sober, they helped that next person go through it. Here's the book and so on. But I just want to emphasize that this is it's a self-contained. I had a sponsor. I didn't get a sponsor until I was 6 months sober. When I got a sponsor, I chose someone that was 4 years sober. And I chose them because they weren't doing a whole lot in AA. And I thought, well, help keep them busy, help get them busy. After a day or two after I asked him to sponsor me, he went out with a newcomer woman from Casa Serena in Santa Barbara, and she promptly went out on heroin, and they promptly moved in together. And when I would call him, and you see from that picture, I was pretty spaced out at the end of my drinking. I was, lights were on and nobody was home. Did everyone get a look at that? Anyone that wanted to? I would have to, people would say at meetings, call your sponsor, you know, call your sponsor. And I'd have to stop for 10 minutes to think of something to call my sponsor about. And I'd finally think of something and I'd call him. And I think because I'm a middle child, I'm resourceful and I'm there for you kind of person. You can whine on my shoulder, although nowadays I won't let you whine on my shoulder, but you can talk to me after the meeting anytime. But anyhow, I'd finally call him, and then he'd whine on my shoulder about his relationship for 10 minutes or 15. And then he'd say, so how are you doing? I'd say, I'm fine. I'm going to a meeting. I had no clue what I was calling him about. I just was calling my sponsor because that was what people said to do. Anyhow, so now he was my sponsor for a year, so until I was 18 months sober. When I was 9 months sober, I took it upon myself as a ninth step amends to myself. And we did the first three steps together, but I didn't get going on my fourth step. But I did a ninth step amends to myself and got nicotine sobriety at 9 months sober, one day at a time and by God's grace. And 9 months went by from there, and I still hadn't proceeded on my fourth step, and I gained 50 pounds. And I was at a speaker meeting at the Alano Club in Santa Barbara, and it was a smoking meeting back then on Sunday night, and it was just thick, and I caught a nicotine fit, and I got back to my apartment, and it was like, I want to smoke really bad, but I really don't want to smoke. And my other two choices was suicide, to jump off the San Marcos Pass Bridge, which I realized was jumping to the ultimate conclusion, and it was jumping to the ultimate conclusion. Anyhow, it was not what I was going to do. Or drink. And it was really drink or smoke. And I really, really, really did. It was really hard to quit smoking. But I really didn't want to drink. And in my mind's eye, I could see a bottle of Jack Daniels on my coffee table. I didn't get it, but I could see it in my mind's eye. And I could see as clearly as could be right then that for me to drink would be to turn my will and my life over to the care of alcohol. And it was just clear as could be. If I drink, I'm going where alcohol takes me. And I like to share that in detail. I don't usually share it in detail during a meeting, but for the newcomers to know, you know, you look at the third step up there and it says made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of alcohol as we understood him. And a lot of people say, I'm not turning my will and my life over to the care of nothing. You know, I got it. I'm not turning my will and life over. But I just want you to recognize, like I did, that every time I drank, I turned my will and my life over to the care of alcohol. I went where alcohol took me. If this is alcohol, before 10 minutes goes by, I'm on the way out the door. I got other ideas of something to do. And anyhow, so I like to share that.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I got on my knees and I redid my third step, and God sent me directly to Safeway to get a pack of Camel Straights, and I started smoking again, and I got another sponsor the next day, and a guy that was kind of tough love kind of sponsor, and the other sponsor, I called him and thanked him for his help, and got going on the steps, and I lost 50 pounds, and I got through the rest of my steps by the time I was 2 years sober, and when I was 2 years, 2 months, 2 weeks, and 2 days sober, as it happened, I got nicotine sobriety again, and I gained 50 pounds again over a long period of time. But when I got nicotine sobriety the second time, I was like, I don't care if I weigh 500 pounds, I don't want to smoke. I don't, you know, when I smoke a cigarette, and it's okay to talk about it because we can talk about drugs and stuff, so when I smoke a cigarette, I'm not smoking a cigarette, it's a cigarette smoking me. And I hate to bum out you're smoking out there, but it's smoking you, you're not smoking it. But anyhow, that's another issue, outside issue, so I'm done with that. Okay, so now I'm going to bust out the J word for a minute or two, and I'm going to tell a story about a miracle, or possibly a miracle or whatever. And I like to share it because it's a really good metaphor. And my point in being here and sharing the way I'm sharing I like to drink. I love to drink. And I'm an alcoholic, and if it's Miller time, I got to drink water or coffee or something like that. But it doesn't mean I don't love to drink. And this is Miller time. So, where was I? Okay. So, I'm not going to use the F-bomb or the S-bomb, the little one. But I am going to use a J-bomb. And I had a friend who was 9 or 10 years, I was about 10 years sober, and he was a little less, and he was a practicing Christian, and but a convicting kind of practicing Christian. He wanted to convict me on exactly what do I believe, and I'm not a Bible thumper. There's some things in the Bible that are excellent, and there's some that's not to me, and Remind me, I want to, the J. Baum story that I want to tell, because I want to say something else right now. If anybody's got enough brain cells left. One thing that I really wanted to flash on you guys that I see, and some of us in the room see it, and I guarantee you not all of us see it, and I see it better at different times and not so good at different times, and sometimes I don't see it at all, but I know that I'm in a room full of higher powers, children. You know, I'm in a room of human beings that each has a heart and each has a mind and a spirit and a physical being and a really bad history. And a lot of us have a lot of hope. And those of you that don't have it, I hope that you walk out of here with a little more than you walked in with, because there's life here. This is the land of the living. Anyhow, so I just want to pause and recognize, acknowledge each of you. Like, when I first got here, I could hardly see past my pack of Camel Straights. I smoked Camel Straights because when people would bum a cigarette off you and they heard what you smoked, they'd pass. Yeah. I quit smoking Marlboros or Territons or Winstons because That's how big my world was. Anyhow, and just a word or two about the end of my drinking. About 20 months before I got sober, this woman friend who I thought I might marry someday drowned in a storm. And for the next 20 months, I mean, my drinking, I was an alcoholic anyhow, but for the next 20 months, it pretty much went on every day. I swore it off in the morning, and sometime in the afternoon I got started again, and then I drank until I passed out or crashed out, or it was too late to go get more. And I would get up in the morning and I'd swear it off. I'm not going to drink today. And by some time later on, I got going again. And one day my mom stopped by my workshop and she said, "We noticed you haven't been happy for a while. Would you see this therapist?" And I noticed I hadn't been happy for a while too. And I'd been thinking about a therapist, my friend that drowned. they never found her, and her car was washed off the road, and our relationship, whatever it was illicit, so to speak. She was separated. I had met her soon-to-be ex-husband. I'd met her dad, her mom, her stepdad. I'd met people. I'd met family. But I was drinking when she was lost, and I wasn't able to, on an emotional level or whatever, to connect with these people that I knew to express condolences about their loss. And so I just held it all inside. And anyhow, so when my mom said, you know, would you see this therapist? I said, yeah, I've been thinking about it. So I called this therapist, and she said, see you tomorrow. I said, sure. And so I knew, I had a sense I was going to have to not drink till I took care of my problems. You know, take care of my grief, take care of whatever my problems are. Don't drink until then, or don't drink till I get my problems out of the way. And so that day or that night, I had my last couple of Camel Straights, and I had my last couple of beers in the fridge, and I went to bed early, about 10 o'clock. And I got to back up a little bit. In high school, I had the top SAT score in the high school, and I was student body president. Would have been voted most likely to succeed. I wanted to marry my high school sweetheart and make babies, and I communicated so well. I had no clue, like after we graduated, she moved 3,000 miles away to Florida State because she wanted to be a teacher, and I had no clue that she wasn't on board with just making babies and figuring out life as you go on. I don't know. But anyhow, so it was a long ways down. When I graduated high school in 67, the Vietnam War was going on, and I eventually got a conscientious objector, and they drafted up to, they had a lottery going on, and they drafted to 195, and I was 199, so I didn't go, I didn't have to do alternative service. And once I got clear of it all, I was kind of, like, from after high school, it kind of was coincidental in a way, but like I remember in June of 1968 when Robert Kennedy was shot, and I checked out emotionally. You know, Martin Luther King had been shot and John Kennedy had been shot and all this stuff is going on. And where as a 7 or 8 year old, I love life, love God, love, you know, life is beautiful and bring great things to life. By that time, it was like messed up. And I went on strike basically and nobody really noticed except me, but it coincided with smoking pot and starting to drink more. During high school, I didn't drink alcoholically very often. I didn't go jonesing for it or anything. But anyhow, so when I was going to see the therapist the next day, and I did early to bed. I was going to do early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. And I smoked my last couple Camel Straights, and I had my last couple beers, and hit the sack, and I couldn't get to sleep. And I got up, and I went to Safeway, and I got a pint of rum, and a liter of Coca-Cola, and a pack of Camel Straights, and went to bed. And I didn't go to bed. I got back, and in my living room in my apartment, there was a wood crate with a little black and white TV, and a wood crate next to the chair, and my chair, and I was watching a movie, some kind of movie from 11 to 1, I can't remember, and then from 1 to 3 was a movie called The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, and that was like totally a metaphor for Billy Norris at the end of his drinking. And got up the next day, and at the end of that movie, it was, I remember looking at the clock, it was 3:02 a.m. on October 2nd, 1984, and if I don't drink and don't die, I'll be 30 in October. And I looked at the clock and tipped up what was left in the glass, and that was it. And saw the therapist the next day, and we shared my grief about Laura that died. And she asked me to not drink till you see me next week. And I said, sure. And a lot of people get here, and they're jonesing to, you know, not drinking one day at a time is really hard. And for me, at the end of it, it was not hard. I was done. And so I see the therapist the next week, and we're talking about alcoholism, and she gives me a book to read called Under the Influence and asked me to read it and see me next week and don't drink till you see me next week. And I said, sure. And so I read it, and it talks about the progressivity of alcoholism and the stages of alcoholism. And in a quick nutshell, there's having a large capacity to drink at first stage. Second stage is using it for emotional response to life. I'm bored, I'm sad, I'm glad, I'm happy, I'm whatever. It's time to have a drink. That's my emotional response. Then third stage was physically, you've got to have a drink to function. Got to, you know, and I did. I cut rectangles of leather for a living and sewed zippers onto them. And I didn't have to function until I came to, you know. If I'd have had to function like 7:30 in the morning to get a job, to show up at a job, I might have had to drink to function. And so I don't know if I was second or third stage, but fourth stage is cirrhosis and wet brain and death. So there's no one here that's dead, and there's might be some cirrhosis in the room. We all have a little bit of wet brain in my book, and there's different stages of wet brain, you know, and it's not to play with, you know, but we want to maintain where we're at, and if we do, then one of my other favorite lines in the big book is the point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines, and you will grow along spiritual lines. We have to stop the bleeding, you know, we have to stop the mayhem first. But anyhow, so saw her the third time, and I'd read the book, and she said, and I said, yeah, I think I'm an alcoholic. I definitely use alcohol for emotional response to life and so on. So I got to Alcoholics Anonymous that night. She asked me to go to a meeting. I called my brother-in-law that had invited me over the years. And when do I stop? That's straight up 5, 6:30? Okay. So I called my brother-in-law. He took me to Tuesday Men's Stag down in Santa Barbara, and that became my home group. When I was 4 months sober, I became the secretary there and continued seeing the therapist for a while. But anyhow, I got here, and I remember being at my first meeting, or second, third, whatever, and listening and hearing, like, these people know what alcoholism is about, and I have it, and it's progressive, and there's not a cure for it, but you can be in remission. And speaking of being remission, I hope this isn't too hard for all of you to listen to, because I know sometimes I'm pretty spaced. But today is my second oldest niece, it's her birthday today, and she had ovarian cancer, and she had surgery, and she had chemo, and she had radiation, and she got into remission, and we had a barbecue at her house, and she could eat real food, and Fields of Gold was playing in the background, and it came back, and she had surgery again, and chemo, and radiation again, and she got into remission, and when she was diagnosed, she had a 6-year-old daughter, and she got to remission again. Then it came back. She was too weak for surgery. She had chemo and radiation, and she died. And I like to share about her, whether it's her birthday or not, because she could be in remission. She would, if she could have chemo for 5 hours a day to be in remission, she would have done it. You know, if she could have surgery every other Saturday to be in remission, she would have done it. You know, she was there for her daughter for 5 years, going through all kinds of horrific stuff, and there was never the question, do you feel like having chemo today? Do you feel like having radiation today? You know? So for us, we get to be in remission. I'm in remission the same today as 10,000 days ago. I had 700 days of sobriety or something like that. It's like I'm in remission, and a lot of us in this room are in remission, and remission is the name of the game. And if my niece, Debbie, could have been in remission as easy as we can be in remission, she'd be alive today, but she couldn't, and she's not. So, speaking of remission, I'm going to bust out. It's like what I shared from the front part of the big book about our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. It's like if life does not have meaning, there is no point to being sober. And speaking of, it's sort of, well, I want to say for the newcomer especially that alcoholism is not a character defect. It's not because you're lazy or you're just a goof off or you're just funky person or whatever. If alcoholism was a character defect, then we just go to church, get saved, become a Buddhist, go see the psychiatrist, go to adult education or back to school and get our character nice and strong so we can go have a couple of beers. You know, I could have the strongest character in the world, and if I have a drink, the craving's going to kick in because my alcoholism is not about my character. So I'd like to emphasize that for anyone that might be thinking that it's a character defect. And while I'm on that, I identify my alcoholism because when I have a drink, a craving kicks in. And that craving that kicks in to me is a condition. There's nothing that I can do about it. There's nothing that's ever going to change it. I approach life, I learned this in Alcoholics Anonymous, or I learned this in my time of sobriety, that to me, by definition, if something seems like a problem, the surest way to know that something's a problem is if there's a solution. Because if it doesn't have a solution, it's not a problem, it's a condition. So my physiology is a condition. I can't do anything about that. Having the physiology that I have, the fact that I could allow myself to think it's okay to have a drink is a problem, because there's a solution to my thinking. So anyhow, if anyone here is thinking about drinking or struggling or just having troubles with your thinking in any old way, I have troubles with my thinking all the time. Thinking is something that can change. And as long as I stay sober, I have a chance to walk through it and get it better and make it better. Anyhow, so time for my J-bomb story. This friend was trying to convict me about what do I believe about Jesus. Does Jesus do miracles? And I was inspired because I'd said my 11-step prayer that day. And to me, the 11-step prayer is, God, please give me the knowledge of your will for me and the power to carry it out. So anyhow, I said, well, you mean like walking on water? And he says, yeah. Do you believe Jesus walked on water? And I said, yeah. I believe Jesus walked where he needed to walk. And I'm not sure whether or not he walked on water, but I do believe that he walked where he needed to walk. And it doesn't matter whether or not he walked on water. What matters is he walked where he needed to walk. But if he needed to walk on water, then yes, absolutely, I believe he did. But the point is that he walked where he needed to walk. And I'm saying that for the newcomers, if you're still with me, is that, and for the people that have some time, being an alcoholic sober, to me, is no less a miracle. I'm walking on water right here, right now, in a metaphorical sense. Anyhow, so I just wanted to share that. So if life doesn't have meaning, there's no point in being sober. And I want to read you a few of my sister-in-law's favorite quotes. And on the cover is just, life is the first gift, love is the second, and understanding is the third. And true wisdom lies in gathering precious things out of each day as it goes by. And this one's really good. Believe in a love that is being stored up for you like an inheritance, and have faith that in this love there is a strength and a blessing so large that you can travel as far as you wish without having to step outside of it. And I don't know if that means anything to anyone in the room, but my first point in reading things like that is to let you know there is more going on than what you have going on within you right now. And the only way to find that more, the only way to come to life within yourself and explore what interests you in life is through sobriety, through the steps, through learning. I know Joseph has a boundless interest or capacity or desire to learn and to live. And that's a whole different way from where it used to be. And it's kind of like when we first get sober, we all get here on broken tricycles. And then we graduate and we got a little bicycle with training wheels. And we got a meeting directory in our pocket and we know where the meetings are and we go or whatever. And then we wind up with a little Honda mini bike or something like that. Then we wind up with an alcoholic car with dents all around and whatever. And then we wind up, sometimes flying, One other thing I wanted to kick out for the newcomers was the saying that Dave Ford said is, alcohol gave me wings to fly, and then it took away the sky. And if you relate to that, then you're in the right place. Anyhow, so life sober. 5 more minutes. I'll read you one other thing. This thing is about humility, and this is about it's the big book is all I need to make a good beginning, and I would never walk away from the big book like I don't need the big book anymore or anything at all like that. But life beckons. If this did not get us out of our prison and just put us in a bigger prison, and this is our world, then it's okay. But if this lets you out of prison and you can take it with you and walk out of the prison and just have this in your hand and be able to show up in life and reach for that, there's something inside of each of us that we can only find by, we have an interest, we have meaning in life, we have something to be going for. Anyhow, I don't want you to see the cover on this book because you'll probably run the other way out of this room really fast. But it doesn't matter where you find something that's true. And this is about humility, and I love it a lot. It's like given most of us in this room can allow for the fact of grace or blessing, something like that. Like in the 11th step, when we pray for knowledge, God's will for us, we will have some kind of knowledge of God's will for us. We will get a sense of direction. We'll get moved in a certain direction. We'll get moved within ourselves or take an action that's appropriate and so on. So let's call that being moved by grace. When we're doing the right thing, we'll say that's moved by grace. Okay, so this is about humility. And it says, humility consists in the fidelity. That's like faithfulness. With which a soul, moved by grace, that's a person, follows its inspirations without letting itself be carried away by self-love. And to me, that's just, it's like I was involved in starting Central Office. A lot of people said, Billy's got to have his own way. And Billy, it was just God's grace. I wanted to walk away from it lots of times, and God said, no. We need a central office. There was a time when we were $400 short. We got a phone call, and a phone call from someone in Ventura, and they owed a financial amends in Santa Maria, and if they made a direct amends, they'd be arrested or something like that. They couldn't do it, couldn't make a direct amends. And they called to see if they could mail a check to central office, and I said, sure. And they mailed a check, and it was $400 on a button. And to me, that was just God's fingerprints on the situation, just right there. And so in doing something like this right here, right now, or having my car with a picture on it, or, I'm connecting the dots way better than I have it lots of times from the podium. So I appreciate y'all bearing with me, because this is as much of a struggle as it might be for you. But the point is, if I say one thing that helps one person want to be sober, my mission's accomplished, and I know lots of you, I have the same gratitude you have to be sober and just to be up here and recognizing it, and it echoes through this room. Anyhow, so when you are moved by grace, when you are moved by seeking knowledge of God's will for you, it's important to do that. It's not an ego trip to do what you're led to do in life. That's what you're here for. We are here to be moved by grace. We're here to be, you know, humanity is a sacred fire. You know, this is a sacred deal, life. And yet we treat it like it's worthless. And I didn't have, you know, I had disdain for God, if there was a God, the day before I got sober. And I experienced my willingness to be sober as some kind of gift, some kind of blessing, some kind of grace. And anyone in the room that doesn't have that, I wish you could have that gift of the willingness to be sober. Thanks for the chance to share.
Okay, I have a plug for Wayne and Billy.